Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties. Welcome to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive back into the series that started it all. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Wings and Ruin, the third book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so that we can really take our time with this incredible story. Now, with that being said, and because we have read this series multiple times, we will be discussing each book with the knowledge of the entire series. But before we give our official spoiler warning, Christina has some announcements.
I sure do. So first of all, thank you so, so much to everyone who has taken the time to rate and review the show. That is so helpful to us, and we so deeply appreciate it. If you have not had time yet, please take a moment to do so. We are sending you a big hug and a big thank you for doing that. Also, yes, we are discussing ACOWAR today, but as this episode drops, it will officially be Brimstone season, the highly anticipated sequel to Callie Hart's Quicksilver. And you know what that means, book besties? It is chapter chat time over on Patreon, our real-time read-along reaction videos. We know you guys love it when we get to do these for new releases, and we are so, so thrilled to get to bring you them for Brimstone. Also this month over on Patreon, we have a book club chat covering Slaying the Vampire Conqueror by Carissa Broadbent, an SJM episode covering Bryce and Hunt from Crescent City, and so much more. We've got two tiers starting at $5 a month, something for everyone, and we would love to welcome you into our Patreon family. So come join the fun at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. Now, Kim, do we have some very special shout outs to do?
We sure do. Okay, so one of the benefits of being one of our tier two book bitches is that you get a special shout out in one of our episodes. So for this episode, we are going to be shouting out Mary Jane Orta, Kara Hunter, and Ashlyn N. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. You are the best. And we love you.
Me too.
Okay, so this is your official spoiler warning for every book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. Anna, let's go.
All right. Well, listeners, we left off last week with Lucien having his very first inner circle dinner extravaganza.
Yes.
We open up this episode with Rhysand taking Feyre to the library for the first time. It's so good to be back. I love the library.
It is. I love it.
Love it so much, especially when we get it in Akasoth. Mm-hmm. The library is carved deep into the mountains beneath the House of Wind, and it's massive. It's quiet, peaceful, almost otherworldly, but what really makes it so special is who it's for, the priestesses. Every single one who lives and works there are all survivors. Women who have been through serious trauma and chose the library as a place of safety and healing. They don't speak unless they want to, and the silence feels very intentional. Rhys tells Feyre it's not about punishment or having them, you know, forced to be hidden. Mm-hmm. It's about peace. And for a court built on power and freedom, it says a lot that they've made space for this kind of gentle, quiet strength.
Yeah.
And there are so many important little things that come out of this scene in this chapter. Mm. And I want to run through some of the quotes and moments that really stand out to us.
Yeah.
My favorite quote in particular, it's a very throwaway quote, but I love it. A library is a temple of sorts.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
It is. And Sarah makes a point in all of her series to emphasize the importance of literature and learning, specifically in Throne of Glass. And while I think the temple, you know, quote unquote temple that Sarah is referencing here is more of a spiritual kind because of the safe haven it offers to the priestesses, it still resonates with us as readers because the library is a temple. It's a place that holds history and thoughts. And it's something that just absolutely resonated with me when I was reading this chapter.
Yeah.
And he goes on, he explains why he created this space. I mean, the library has been there since before him, but he turned it into what it is today.
Yeah.
And he says, I made this library into a refuge for them. Some come to heal, work as acolytes, and then leave. leave. Some take the oaths to the cauldron and mother to become priestesses and remain here forever. But it belongs to them whether they stay a week or a lifetime.
Reese!
Oh, God.
I just love it so much. And, you know, this love is it. Where we first meet Clotho, who's like the head priestess. I kind of think of her as the head librarian. I don't actually know if that's the case, but that's who she is in my head.
Yes.
Yes.
We learn about her trauma and how she was brutalized by a group of fae males, and they cut out her tongue, and what they did to her hands, you guys, it is so awful.
It's horrible.
And Reese also admits in this part of the book that he came to the library a lot in the first few weeks after he got back from under the mountain. Reese! And when you know why the majority of the women are here, you know, not it's not all sexual assault, but I think a lot of it is. Mm-hmm. And to know Reese Sands' history and that this is why he felt safe here.
Yeah.
That breaks my heart.
And that this was his refuge too.
Yeah. He needed that quiet. He didn't want to have to talk about it. You know, he just wanted to come someplace where he could not be pushed, I think, to face what happened under the mountain.
Sure. Well, and you also think about he left. Feyre goes back to the Spring Court. He knows Feyre is his mate at this point, and he's returning back to Valaris, and he's dealing with the trauma from Amarantha, but also the idea that his mate very well could be going off to marry and be with somebody else.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to process at the same time, and I'm sure it was such a refuge for him.
Oh, God.
Okay, so the sadness aside, we do have some really cute flirty moments in the library, and I mean, who doesn't love a sexy, sassy banter time with our High Lord in a library, every book girly's dream. Like, say less.
It's, sign me up.
It's say less. Oh my God.
There's this really cute moment. They've been bantering back and forth for a while, like trading kisses, sexual innuendos, and Rhysand is being super sexy, and he leans in towards Feyre, and it's that moment right before you kiss.
Yeah.
And then he winnows away, and she's like, what? Where the hell did you go? And mind to mind, he's on a totally different floor. And he says, I can't work with you distracting me. If you're sitting next to me, the last thing on my mind is reading dusty old books, especially when you're in all that tight leather.
I love it.
I love it.
I love how we have these moments of we are introduced to the library and it's very poignant and meaningful. But then the next page, you have these fun, sexy moments. Like Sarah does such a good job of balancing the kind of the heavy with the light.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do, though, have a really important conversation with Rhysand that I want to touch upon about how he is always willing to give and sacrifice himself. He essentially says that he will gladly burn himself out in this war if it means defeating Hybern and giving Feyre and his court a chance. And Cassian's quote from a previous chapter while he's sparring with Feyre immediately came to mind. It's the same chapter we referenced earlier, but Reese pulled the same shit 50 years ago is what Cassian says. When he went to that Dan party Amarantha threw. I'll never forget it, you know, the moment when he spoke to us all mind to mind, when I realized what was happening and that he'd saved us, trapped us here and tied our hands. But it went quiet in my head in a way it hadn't been before. He's inclined to do everything himself, to give everything of himself. He can't stand to let anyone else offer up anything. That smile faded. Neither can you, he says to Feyre. And Feyre says, and you can? Cassian's response is, it's not easy, but yes, I'm general of his armies. Part of that includes knowing how to delegate. I've been with Reese for over 500 years, and he still tries to do everything himself. He still thinks it's not enough.
Oh, God. That's some foreshadowing right there.
That is some heavy foreshadowing. Mm. And yes. It's exactly, and also Rhysand's whole conversation with Feyre on in the library where he's like, I will give anything and everything I have to protect you, to see you safe.
Oh, yeah. Reese. I love that you pulled this quote from Cassian too here, because it's so important to see it from Cassian's point of view as well. It's Reese is self-sacrificing, but in self-sacrificing, it hurts the people he's sacrificing for.
Yes.
We know from chapter 54, when he talks about going to that party with Amarantha, he was going to kill her. He was going to kill Amarantha.
Yeah.
And he says, I didn't bring Cassian. I didn't bring Asriel. I didn't bring anyone because I didn't want them to be a part of that. And like in that, he was trapped there by himself.
Yes.
So it was just, it's this cycle that he doesn't think he's enough. He doesn't think him giving everything is enough.
Is enough.
Yes. Seeing it from Cassian's point of view is very important here. It's nice that other characters in the book and Rhysand's friends recognize his, it's kind of an insecurity. It's kind of a fault of his.
Yes.
The fact that he doesn't trust, like Cassian says, I don't have a choice. I have to delegate.
Right.
I can't fight the armies by myself.
Yeah.
I have to trust that my captains can do their job.
Yep. Exactly.
And Rhysand, I don't think that it's he doesn't trust everybody else. It's more that he is so terrified of losing everyone because what does he say? Everyone I love is taken from me.
That's exactly what it is.
It's a fear.
Oh, it is a fear. Yes. And he would rather burn himself out and sacrifice himself than for anyone that he loves to be taken from him again.
Yes.
And I think Feyre coming into his life is a huge shift in that. I think before Feyre, he didn't have that peace that would ground him, that everything is worth sacrificing for them. But now it's, but then I'm leaving Feyre, but then I'm leaving Nyx. Like that has to be a huge shift for him in how he goes about navigating all these things.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the last big takeaways from the end of this chapter is Feyre realizes that if Hybern has the number of soldiers on their side, which they do, then she's like, well, they have the numbers. Why don't we have the monsters?
You know what we can get? You know what we got? We don't got numbers, but we got monsters.
And so she's like, we're going to go to the Bone Carver. We're going to see if he'll work with us. And I don't think she's touched upon the Weaver yet at this point. I think that lady scares the shit out of everybody. So she's like, we'll just leave her, you know, leave her to be.
Just like let her on go. The order of scariness. Bone Carver is the most approachable. So let's try him first.
A million percent. Yeah. Okay, so yes. So Feyre is like, let's get the monsters on our side. And this is also where Rhysand drops a little funny little nugget about Cassian.
Oh, yeah.
That this is where we learn that he is absolutely terrified of the monster that lives at the bottom of the library named Bryaxis. And the fact that he's the only one of the inner circle that has faced this monster, the Bryaxis, and he's the Lord of Bloodshed.
Yeah.
And he was left so speechless and terrified that he literally looked at every single one of them and was like, don't you ever go, don't even bring up the name Bryaxis.
Don't you even speak that name to me.
Don't even think it. I love this. This and the allergies are just such perfect little humanizing things of Cassian that are so quintessential to his character in my brain. Like, it makes him so him. I love it so much.
Especially because I know Bryaxis isn't a little kitty cat, but for some reason, I think of her as this black panther that creeps along in the dark. I don't know. I had, this is just, I know she's, or he, I think it's a she. I don't know why she's giving me female scary energy.
Energy.
But are you saying, I'm sorry, black cat energy? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. She's giving me black cat energy. Yes, she is. But the way she's like, I just want a window, guys.
Like, I just want to like just gossip and chit-chat.
Chit-chat.
Like, am I asking for too much? I don't think so. I'll fight in your damn war.
Like, it's very black cat energy.
It is.
But yet it terrifies Cassian, which is hilarious to me, especially because he's literally attracted to the
Nessa,
blackest cat
who's the
ever.
Most blackest cat of all black cats.
Yeah.
100%. Well, speaking of Nesta, let's pivot here and discuss one of the most interesting friendships maybe in this whole series, Amryn and Nesta.
Yeah.
The terrifying dynamic duo that they are. I just love the two of them together. Mm. So we first see their dynamic really start to take shape during that first dinner that Lucien attends with the inner circle. Amryn says to Nesta, quote, we are the same, you and I, not in flesh, not in the thing that prowls beneath our skin and bones, but I see the kernel, girl. You do not fit the mold that they shoved you into, the path you were born upon and forced to walk. You tried, and yet you did not, could not fit. And then the path changed. I know what it is to be that way. I remember it long ago as it was. When you erupt, girl, make sure it's felt across worlds.
Oh,
ooh,
wow. Okay.
I love this quote.
First thing, worlds, plural. Yep. Interesting, Amryn.
Uh-huh.
Also, though, this is so huge coming from Amryn. Just, like, monumental. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't just recognize Nesta's pain here. She sees herself in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also our first real hint at just how powerful Nesta is. For Amryn to be recognizing her power, and for Amryn to be seeing potential in it. Amryn, our tiny agent, terrifying one.
Yep.
This is such a big revelation for the inner circle and the reader, how powerful Nesta really is at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love the sense of foreshadowing we get with the when you erupt, girl, make sure it's felt across worlds. It's just like, it's giving, wielding the trove. It's giving, becoming queen of the dust courts. It's giving lots of things.
I love it so much.
And Sarah, our queen, she loves a like calls to like moment. Mm-hmm. She loves it. And this is what this is. Both Nesta and Amryn have these sharp edges. They don't fit the mold and they carry this immense power. And I think Nesta sees and admires Amryn's inner strength.
Mm-hmm.
And Amryn sees not just what Nesta is, but who she could be. Like who she could become.
Yeah.
And it's it's really beautiful and important for Nesta to be recognized like that.
Yeah.
In this group, especially.
Yes.
So ultimately, Nesta does agree to train with Amarin. They are training to hone her ability to track things that are also made, just like her, mm-hmm. and possibly also heal the wall, basically trying to see if they can use whatever Nesta took from that cauldron to their advantage in any possible way. And Nesta deciding to train with Amarin is so pivotal for her. It gives her a sense of purpose besides Elaine.
Yes.
It's her thing she can do and focus on besides mother henning Elaine.
God yes. knows they both need a break from that probably.
That dynamic needs to take a break. And something else that I think Nesta really appreciates is how Amarin handles her. Mm. Amarin is very blasé about everything because she's thousands of years old and she's very just like, okay, like whatever.
See, been there, done that, seen yeah. this.
Like, you don't scare me. Exactly. I'm not going to like tiptoe around you and be very like, oh God, don't want to upset Nesta. Like, she's just like, okay, like I see you.
Yes. She doesn't treat Nesta with kid gloves. Mm. And I think Cassian calls Feyre on this too at some point. You know, he's like, we got to trust her. We got to get her out of the house. You can't yeah. just keep her holed up in here.
Yeah.
And I think Amarin recognizes that Nesta needs to be kind of pushed a little bit more and yes. she needs to be shoved out of her comfort zone. I think Nesta's also very like, lead me when I'm in the mood to be led.
1,000,000,000%.
I was like, push her, but only when she's in the mood to be pushed. And then otherwise, don't fucking do it. Yeah. She'll kill
otherwise,
you.
Leave.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people are scared of her. They tiptoe around her because she is scary to them.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. then makes Nesta more defensive and more scary and lean into that trope, that dynamic.
It's a never-ending cycle.
Exactly. And so I think Amarin is like, I'm not scared of you. The same way Nesta is like, I'm not scared of you.
Yeah.
They see that in each other.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
All right. So one more moment I just want to highlight that is so fun and delicious between them is when Feyre interrupts one of their study sessions and Amarin says, quote, if you want someone to gossip with, go find one of the dogs. I'm sure Cassian's still sniffing around upstairs. Nesta's lips twitched upward. Amarin pointed at her with a slender finger ending in a sharp manicured nail. Concentrate. Vital organs must be shielded at all times. I tapped a hand against the open doorway. Okay, good luck. She doesn't need luck, Amarin said. Nesta huffed a laugh. Oh, God.
She's hysterical.
Nesta.
Rolling on the ground.
She smirked and huffed a laugh.
Who is this woman?
She is rolling on the ground with laughter. This is, calm down, Nesta. Calm down.
I mean.
She huffed a laugh. Like, oh, she's joyful.
She is joyful. She's full of joy.
She's joyful.
Yes.
She is.
This is so true, though.
Oh, God. I love this. I love seeing them together. And this is all just really important groundwork as we set up their relationship for Akasov.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, friends, it's time to get back on the field trip school bus. Okay. Everybody get on. Arms and hands inside at all times. We are going back to the prison.
Woo!
We go to the prison a lot more than I remembered upon reread. I was like,
a lot.
Oh, we're going back again. Okay. Okay,
and
wow.
guess what? We go back a lot more, too, in the next book.
Multiple times.
I feel like Sarah was like, you guys really didn't think the prison was going to be important. I literally made you guys go there
16 times throughout this whole series. So this time it is Feyre and Cassian heading to the prison to meet with the bone carver, a.k.a. Bony C.
I forgot.
I have never loved a nickname God. More.
It was the wrong time to take a sip of coffee.
I'm sorry.
Oh, Bonus.
Good old Bony C. Okay. So, but this time Feyre is not here to bargain with Bony C. She is there to ask if he will fight with them in the war against Highburn. It's a bold ask, you know, considering he's been down there for God knows how long. And he is as creepy and cryptic as ever. Sarah loves a cryptic character. Let me tell you what, throughout all of her series, there are characters that I'm like, what are we doing? Say what you mean what you say.
And always those characters are people we need vital information from.
Vital.
Yes. We always,
vital.
The most important information yeah. comes from those cryptic characters.
And they go, well, let me tell you a tale.
Let me just sit down and get comfortable. And I'm like, God damn it, we don't have time for
There'll
this.
There'll be a lot of analogies, a lot of riddles. Yes. Take your time. Take some notes.
Exactly. Get your notebooks out. But we do actually start to get some real insight finally into who the bone carver actually is. He's not just a strange ancient being locked away. He is actually a death god. And not just that, he is the sibling of the Weaver and Koshay, two other terrifying immortal creatures. And it is the first time that we really start to understand that the Carver is not just a quirky side character, okay? He is part of something much bigger and much older. And if he agrees to fight with them, it could really change everything. And so this is what it says. Oh, God. The Carver traced three overlapping interlocked circles in the dirt. You have met my sister, my twin, the Weaver, as you now call her. I knew her as Striga. She and our older brother, Koshi, how they delighted in this world when we fell into it, how those ancient fae feared and worshipped them. Had I been braver, I might have bided my time, waited for their power to fade, for that long-ago fae warrior to trick Striga into diminishing her power and becoming confined to the middle. Koshi, too, confined and bound by his little lake on the continent, all before Prithian, before the land was carved up and any high lord was crowned.
Wowie wow.
I have so many questions.
Love.
That long ago fae warrior. Who you be? Who is that?
Pin for mastermind.
Pin it. I did see an interesting theory that maybe Vasa somehow descended of that ancient fae warrior. And ooh, that's why he's keeping her there, because her blood is the key to unlocking him in the spell. Which is interesting.
So he can leave his little lake.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Also, the idea that they are twins, I don't know why that, it's like The Shining. That just terrifies me extra that they're twins. Like the bone carver and the weaver, just yeah, like, ugh. But he does make a point to say that his twin sister and older brother are both stronger than he is. Terrifying. Contained and diminished as they are, their influence remains considerable.
Ooh. Really ominous for where we're going with Koshe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is what else he says. I am forgotten. That's what I am. And that's how I prefer to be. Pin that for mastermind, folks.
Chills.
Wow. Forgotten. And that's how I prefer to be. He has no desire to leave the prison, but he says he will fight for them against Tyburn if Feyre can just like casually locate the Ouroboros mirror and look into it and not lose her mind and go crazy, which has actually never happened before. So it is kept in the Hewn City, and Kier later tells us that really no one has looked into that mirror and lived to tell the tale, okay? So it's a suicide mission, essentially. Like, it's yes, not going to go well. And he's like, yeah, sure, if you can find it and look into it and not lose your mind and or die, then yeah, I will fight with you. It's very Evil Queen and Snow White.
Yes, I love that parallel.
Very, yeah. It's very Snow White, Evil Queen.
Absolutely.
I also love that both the Bone Carver and Bryaxis have become so fond of their prisons.
Yes.
That they don't want to yes, leave.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've made it homey here. Yeah.
Guys, I've done some redecorating.
Stockholm Syndrome, but make it, like, cute and fun.
It makes you wonder, like, why don't they want to come out? Like, what are they afraid of?
Well, I think the Bone Carver is afraid of his siblings.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I would be afraid of them, too, if they were my yeah, siblings, to be honest with yep, you. I'd be like, nope, I'm good in here.
Bryaxis is just a kitty cat who's like, I'm very much a homebody.
I actually don't like talking to anybody, but I just want a window.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's time for Fae Witch Watch.
We love a Fae Witch Watch.
We love a Fae Witch Watch moment. This is what he says. Clever, that Fae warrior. Her bloodline is long gone now, though a trace still runs through some human line. No one remembers her name, but I do. She would have been my salvation had I not made my choice long before she walked this earth.
What? Okay. Was he in love?
Like, my salvation, which is what Rhysand says to Feyre.
Yeah. But yeah, Christina, I think what you were saying about Vasa, maybe that's the Fey line. We also thought for like the Mama Archeron, but I wonder if it could also reference that and why Koshe is keeping her at the lake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love that.
This feels very important. This feels very pointed. And no one remembers her name, but it runs through some human line. Human, which... That's very interesting, because she was a fae warrior.
Mm-hmm. If we remember, Vasa is a human queen.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, Christina.
So that could be very interesting.
So before we leave the prison, I have a little Cassian and Nesta mate watch I want to run through. So the bone carver says this about Nesta. The carver stroked the shard of bone in his palm, attention fixed upon a stone-faced Cassian. What if I tell you what the rock and darkness and sea beyond whispered to me, Lord of Bloodshed? How they shuddered in fear on that island across the sea. How they trembled when she emerged. She took something, something precious. She ripped it out with her teeth. Cassian's golden brown face had drained of color, his wings tucking in tight. What did you wake that day in Highburn, Prince of Bastards? What came out was not what went in. How lovely she is, new as a fawn and yet ancient as the sea. How she calls to you, a queen as my sister once was. Terrible and proud, beautiful as a winter sunrise.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
It's like very descriptive and I love it.
Okay, a queen as my sister once was. Is he talking about the weaver was once a queen?
Well, they were death gods, so I wonder if like where they were before they were.
It's just interesting that he says a queen as my sister once was, yeah, but he like refers to them usually as death gods.
Yeah.
And that they were worshipped which to me is more godlike than queen-like. Just interesting.
Yes, very interesting verbiage.
That's a mastermind clue if I've ever heard one.
Absolutely
that is. Yes, I agree. But I love the way that he says, like, she ripped it out with her teeth.
Oof,
and she took something precious.
She's a wolf.
She is a wolf. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I don't know. I love the way the bone carver describes Nesta, and he is really setting it up that she is the formidable force.
Absolutely.
So y'all better watch out.
He better get right.
Yeah.
But it's very telling here that this is all pointed at Cassian. If we had any doubt that they're mates, this isn't to her sister. This is to Cassian. It's what if I told you about this person? The way she calls to you.
Yes.
The fact that the bone carver can sense this is so fascinating.
Absolutely.
Also, the island, how they shuddered in fear on that island across the sea.
It's Highburn.
That has to be Highburn, right?
But yes. I think what he's saying is how that island shuddered when she emerged from Highburn, like out of the cauldron. He felt the shudder on that island, like when she came out, that it was like reverberated across.
That's intense.
Everybody else like casually walking around Perithian. Oh, little minor earthquake. What was that?
What was that? Orgasm by a High Lord? Nope. It was Nesta and the
Gods. We stand in favor at it again. It's a little morning delight. Oh my delight. God.
Okay, but the follow-up to this that I really love is once Cassian and Feyre leave the prison, Feyre turns to Cassian and she says, would you be frightened of her, of Nesta, if she was death? And what Cassian says is, I'm a warrior. I've walked beside death my entire life. I would be more afraid for her to have that power, but not afraid of her. He considered and added after a heartbeat, nothing about Nesta could frighten me.
Oh, sweet Cassian!
Sweet Cassian!
I love that.
God, I love him so much.
And I love, that is such a specific thing to say about Nesta. Nothing about Nesta could frighten me, because Nesta frightens everybody. That's her thing, is that she purposely scares people away from her. So him saying that could never happen. Yeah. I will always be coming back to her. She could never scare me away.
I mean, mates.
I think she scares herself. I think that's also part of her problem, is she hates herself more than anybody hates her.
Yep.
She has such self-loathing. And I think Cassian obviously will tackle this more in Akasoff, but he takes a look at her and he's like, you don't scare me. I see all of you.
You, and sorry. I am not afraid.
Oh, God,
it's beautiful.
All right, Christina, next stop on the field trip. Where are we going?
Beep, beep. Here we go. It's time for another trip to the Hewn City, everyone.
Woo-woo!
Which means it's also time for another throne scene moment. Woo! This is different than the last time, but it's incredible nonetheless. But before that, I just do have to quickly note this moment when they're getting ready. So Feyre's sitting at her vanity and Rhys is behind her. And quote, together we stared at our reflection, Lord and Lady Knight, ready to be wicked, he purred in my ear. It's so good. Also, my brain is just like really wicked right now.
Wicked.
Which that really reminds me of that one song we're going to get back to where Elfie's going to be like, for the first time I feel wicked. Ooh. Okay. All right. So our crew arrives and Feyre quickly realizes there's only one throne on the dais. But Rhys, always one step ahead, he leads Feyre straight to it like it's this choreographed performance. And quote, Rhys only winked as he gracefully escorted me right into that throne. The movement as easy and smooth as a dance. The crowd murmured as I sat, the black stone bitingly cold against my bare thighs. They outright gasped as Rhys simply perched on the arm of the throne, smirked at me, and said to the Court of Nightmares, bow.
Oh my God, it's so hot.
Guys,
like, I can't.
Shut up.
Like the casual sitting on the arm of the throne, bow.
Goosebumps. I have goosebumps all over my body.
I have chills.
Like, I need a cold shower.
Woo!
This is quite literally everything. The message he's sending with this is so incredible. Like, Rhysand is perching.
The High Lord of the Night Court perching.
And it's so clear. It's like, everybody in this court, you will now treat her with the reverence, the respect you treat me.
Yep.
Even more so.
Yep.
Like, I am perching on this chair. She is the one sitting.
Yep, that's
so
right.
So take that and remember it.
That's okay, right.
Okay, so yes, the real reason we're here, Feyre, Rhys, Mor, and Az meet with Kier to discuss enlisting his Darkbringer Legion. Oh, but Kier, ever the opportunist, sees their need as an opportunity for leverage. And after the humiliation of Rhys breaking his hand and forcing him to beg and apologize last time, this is really his chance to like seize back some of that control. And he takes it. It's the power play. It shows exactly why we can't stand him, why we can't trust him, and why he's garbage trash.
Yep.
He says, quote, there are many similarities between Highburn's people and my own. Both of us trapped, stagnant. Last I checked, Moore cut in, you have been free to do as you wish for centuries longer. Ah, but are we free here? Not even the entirety of this mountain belongs to us, not with your palace atop it. So, yeah. Okay, I just wanted to take a quick pause here. Let's chat about the Hewn City, because I always forget that it's a real big city. It's not just the Court of Nightmares. Which begs the question, how many other dreamers, like Moore, are stuck here? Mm. I know it's not logical to just open up the gates to Velaris, mm-hmm. but how many children are being raised here? Like, could we not save these children and bring them to Velaris somehow? Could we not have, like, a magical boarding school where we make them forget where they're going?
We love a magical secret boarding school.
You know? And then at a certain point, it's like, okay, well, we're going to kind of help you think that you shouldn't be here. But the good one's like, oh, no, they got to study abroad program. I'm sure their parents won't care because they're evil. They're going to live in Velaris.
Yeah.
They can't all be evil. Everyone there can't be evil.
You're right.
No, I agree. And obviously, we hate Kyr, but it also feels like Hewn City is a powder keg, like, about to blow,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And how much longer can a group of people remain stuck in one place forever?
Yeah.
How many Moors are there? How many people like Cassian or Azriel who were stuck in this Illyrian hellhole until Rhysand showed up and Rhysand's mother gave him a warm place to stay?
Yeah.
We are doing great work at Velaris and we are doing great work with the Illyrians. But can we also do something for the children of the Hewn City?
Yeah.
I'm worried about them.
We're concerned. We're very concerned.
I'm concerned. We're raising them to be evil. Like, yeah. why can't we just give them a chance?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kyr, of course, does what will hurt his daughter the most and asks for access to Velaris. Because reminder, he now knows Velaris exists because Hybern attacked it.
Yeah.
So after some back and forth, Rhysand agrees to this. We do learn he already has plans in place to ensure it will be restricted access. No one is allowed to let them come in any store, restaurant, or hotel. They can only walk the streets. No one else will let them in anywhere.
Yeah.
But regardless, Moore's devastated. She is absolutely devastated by this.
Yeah, she doesn't know that in this part either.
Yeah, she doesn't know that Rhys has set up restrictions yet. She just thinks that they're all going to get to chill and hang out in Velaris.
Hang out at Rita's.
Exactly. It's understandable how devastated she is.
Yes.
So, quote, Moore turned pleading eyes to Rhys, her city, the place that she loved so much. I could almost hear it, the crack I knew was about to sound amongst our own circle. More on this in a bit, but this is really rough time for our group. But before we do that, Kim, take us through another little visitor who comes to this meeting.
Oh, this is one of the most interesting parts in this book to me, and it is the conversation with Aerys. So Aerys shows up to the meeting in the Hewn City, and as soon as he walks in the room, the entire mood shifts. There's no pretending everyone's on the same side. No one has forgotten what Aerys supposedly did to Moore. But when he gets called out, the mask slips just a little, and we finally get a glimpse that maybe Aerys isn't the villain we've always assumed. So this is when Moore questions him about leaving her in the woods after her parents nailed the note to her stomach. They're kind of talking about that Aerys is going to be working with them and helping them, and Moore says, so what's the asking price, Aerys? Another little bride for you to torture? Something flickered in Aerys's eyes. I don't know who fed you those lies to begin with, Morrigan. Likely the bastards you surround yourself with. And he sneers at Azriel, which, how fucking dare you? Don't even look at him. Okay, and then this is what he says. There were forces at work that you have never considered, and I am not going to waste my breath explaining them to you. Believe what you want about me.
Wow, lots to unpack here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but then Feyre's like, well, but hold on. You attacked me and beat the crap out of me on the ice at the beginning of the book in the Winter Court. And this is how Aerys responds to that. He says, I was given an order and sent to do it with two of my ... brothers.
The ... there.
What is that? What do you mean?
I feel like they are blood brothers, but I feel like he doesn't recognize them.
Mm.
I think he cares for Lucien, honestly. But yeah. I think the ... is because he hates the connection. I think it hurts him.
Agreed. The same way Lucien was like, that's not my last name.
True. Right.
That same thing. Also, quickly, I just have to note that Moore saying another little bride for you to torture and something flickering in Aerys's eyes. This to me is Aerys thinking, I have watched my mother live her entire life being miserable. I would never do this to someone else.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know what I would do to make this not happen.
Yes.
And then also, every time someone speaks to Moore about lies and truth, we have to flag it. Because him saying, I don't know who fed you those lies.
Yeah.
Dude, can't you tell the truth? What's your truth power?
No, we don't know,
Christina. Understand her power.
Wouldn't this be the time?
Why is it like it works up? I am Morgan and truth is my gift. And I'm like, but is it?
But not when it comes to her own situation or circumstances or her history. We don't know.
I don't understand.
We don't know. We don't understand it.
Okay.
Okay. So do you couple all of that, what we just said, with how angry he gets when Feyre calls into question Aerys's actions with Lucien and what happened with Jessmynda and her execution? This is what he says. You know nothing about what happened that day. Nothing. How do you think he made it to the Spring Border? He said quietly. I wasn't there when they did it. Ask him. I refused. It was the first and only time I have denied my father anything. He punished me, and by the time I got free, they were going to kill him too. I made sure they didn't. Made sure Tamlin got word anonymously to get the hell over to his own border, where two of Aerys' brothers had been killed by Lucien and Tamlin. Aerys picked at a stray thread on his jacket, which that's so interesting because that's what Rhysand always does. So he's picking at a stray thread just like Rhysand.
Yeah.
And this is the line that kills us. Not all of us were so lucky in our friends and family as you, Rhysand.
Oh, such a good line. I love it so much.
It makes us spiral every time.
It's so telling. And also the quote from Akasoff, where Cassian says to him, Aerys, I actually think you are a good man stuck in a bad situation.
Yes.
Mm. He's stuck in this situation. He's trying to make the best of it he can.
He is. And he's supposed to inherit. He doesn't see Lucien as a threat. I think he suspects that Lucien is not his father's son.
Really?
Yeah.
The fact that it was no secret that his mother favored Lucien. And I think he's way more observant. You have to remember also, Lucien wasn't born during the original war when his mother had the affair with Hellion. So Aerys might have picked up on it.
Yeah.
Aerys might have seen it and recognized that his mother was happy for once.
I think regardless, he does not think of him as a threat. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a part of the deal, right? Is that he will ally with them. And then when the time comes, the Night Court will back him to be the heir.
Yes.
Yes.
He's playing the long game.
Yes.
Okay. So one last thing before we leave the Hewn City is Aerys' parting words to Mor. He says, I wouldn't have touched you. Mor blanches. But when you fucked that other bastard, I knew why you did it. Again, that secret smile that had Mor shrinking. Shrinking. So I gave you your freedom, ending the betrothal in no uncertain terms. And then Azriel says, what happened next? He growls. And Aerys says, there are a few things I regret. That is one of them. But perhaps one day, now that we are allies, I shall tell you why, what it cost me.
Oh God, so much to unpack here.
So much. Okay, so two things. One, I suspect that Aerys maybe knows Mor's secret and that she prefers females.
Okay, interesting.
The way that he looks at her and says, I knew why you did it. And there's a secret smile between them.
And she shrinks from it.
Ooh, that's interesting. I totally just thought he meant like, I knew that if you had sex with Cassian that I wouldn't be able to marry you anymore because you'd be ruined for me, like as my bride.
Yeah, right. And I don't think he gives a shit about her virginity.
He doesn't, but like in general, the Autumn Court values, you know, that, yes.
His father would be furious. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so which is why I think, you know, he ends it. But that coupled with what we kind of already started to say a few minutes ago, which is that I think he looked at Mor and saw the hell that she had been living in the Hewn City and that she was basically a bride prize and, you know, a brooding mare. And he saw his mother.
Yeah.
And I think he said, I took a look at you. I knew why you did it and I couldn't do that to you. And so I sent you back and I ended it under no uncertain terms. And I think the thing that he regrets the most is that how is he to know that her own father would nail a letter to her womb and throw her across into the Autumn Court, being like, she's yours trash now.
Exactly. Exactly.
He says there are a few things I regret in life, and that's one of them.
A really popular theory as well is that he also prefers males.
Yes.
And that's the secret he wants to tell her, but he'll only tell her when she will talk to him.
Totally. Oh, that's such an interesting theory.
There's also a mental note that Feyre makes about Aerys later in the book when they're all at the High Lords meeting. And what she says is, some small part of me wondered if Aerys might have grown to be a good male if he had a different father, if one still lurked there beneath centuries of poison. Because Aerys, what had it been like for him under the mountain? What games had he played? What had he endured? Trapped for 49 years, I doubted he would risk such a thing happening again.
That's such a great point. And it also harkens back to a conversation that we had about Tamlin and how Tamlin was raised with such toxic masculinity. And he was raised to prioritize the wrong thing and to potentially be dismissive of females and their emotions. And that Tamlin is clearly a product of his environment. And I think Eris is the exact same. I think Eris is a product of his environment, but I think he is trying to be better. He's trying to break out.
He's trying to break the mold.
Yes, absolutely.
Agreed.
And I think he's biding his time. He's like, I don't want to be stuck in this hellhole. Kill my father, I beg of you.
Please, somebody, God.
Please, somebody kill him.
You know?
I also really think that there's something here in the puzzle piece of Eris and Mor and what really happened when he says to the guards, no one touch her. If you touch her, she is our problem. I think there is some sort of magic, some sort of binding, some sort of something that he knows from his mom. Like, if they touch her, she would have been their property.
Yes.
He's just so specifically, I wouldn't have touched you. And he so specifically tells them not to touch her.
Yeah.
That I really feel like there's something there we're missing. Mm. And it could also be about his mom that, like, if you are a bride prize, and all courts have decided what locks it in is if I touch you on Autumn Court's property.
Interesting.
Or something on our land.
Sure. Yeah.
And I also really think he's the one that alerted Azriel to go get her in the woods.
I agree.
Ooh.
I agree.
We don't know how Azriel knew. And we see that he did the exact same thing for Tamlin and Lucien.
Yes. Mm. He anonymously got a tip out to Tamlin. And I agree. I think he let Azriel know. And also, I think Azriel obviously holds a candle. I wonder if Eris sees that too. And was like, I knew you would come get her, Shadow Singer.
And played upon that. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a great point, Anna.
Fascinating.
Okay, what's next?
All right, so let's talk about our sweet Mor. She's having a rough day, you guys. Oh, my God. So the aftermath of this. The moment they return from the Hewn City, you can feel the shift in Mor. She's been holding it together, playing her role. But the second they're behind closed doors, she just breaks. She is furious with Rhys for giving her father power over her again. And furious he didn't ask her or didn't warn her. And it all just comes out in this gut-wrenching moment. Quote, her voice broke and something in my chest cracked too at the tears that began running down her face. Rhys just stood there, staring down at her, his face unreadable, watching as she slammed her hands into his chest and shouted, why?
That visual gets me.
God.
And I don't blame Mor here.
No.
Yes, it is war times and Rhys had his reasons and fine, but she was so blindsided.
Yes.
And then her chosen family didn't give her a say. They didn't tell her. They didn't bring her in on this. And it's just this whole scene cracks open the inner circle in a way that we don't usually see. Mm-hmm. Mor is just as fierce with Azriel as she is with Rhys, even though Azriel was just doing his job. He's the spymaster. That's his job. But this gives us such insight into Mor's view of their relationship that she is so upset that Azriel did this. She never thought it would be a possibility Azriel would ever do anything, even if it was important to his job, that would hurt her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he would have put her above his job.
Yeah.
And then Cassian, our loyal, steady protector, he's just immediately at her side. His hand is on her back and he's just like disgust curling his lip at the thought of Rhys working with Kieran Eris. And it's so heightened everywhere. And then we hit the emotional climax of the scene where, quote, Mor shook her head, still not looking anywhere but Rhys. If Amarantha were alive and I offered to work with her, even if it was to save us all, how would you feel? Never. They had never come this close to discussing what had happened to him. I approached Rhys's side, brushing my fingers against his own curled around mine. If Amarantha offered us a slim shot at survival, Rhys said, his gaze unflinching, then I would not give a shit that she made me fuck her for all those years. Cassian flinched. The entire room flinched. If Amarantha showed up at that door right now and she could buy us a chance at defeating Hybern, at keeping all of you alive, I would thank the fucking cauldron. Mor shook her head, tears slipping free again. You don't mean that. I do.
Oh, Rhysand.
It's not a good look, Rhysand.
Really rough all around. It is a low blow for Mor to bring in Amarantha. It is a low blow for Rhys to come back and say, I would have thanked the cauldron. It's just all low blows all around.
Yeah,
it's
rough.
So bad.
Yeah.
And you love this inner circle so much. It's so hard to see them broken like this.
Well, it's very raw.
Yes.
For a couple different reasons. It's Rhysand's vulnerability. It's, you know, and what happened to him under the mountain. And it's Mor facing also what Mor has faced her entire childhood with her father, her trauma. She's like, who gives a shit about Eris? This has nothing to do with Eris. Like, work with him. I don't care.
Right.
But my father, what he did to me, his own child. And then also Rhysand saying this, but then the next chapter we get his POV and it's just him and Feyre. And he says, I lied. I would have killed her on the spot. I would have killed Amarantha on the spot.
And Feyre's like, I know.
I know.
And later, just to tie back into what we were saying at the beginning of the episode, he says to Feyre on the rooftop, this is why I am self-sacrificing like this because of more crying, because of avoiding things like this. I would rather take on the brunt of the hurt myself.
Yes. Totally.
And it's the tiny ancient one, Amryn, who comes in and she looks at him at the end of all of this and she's mad. And she says, "You're a sneaky bastard. You always have been and likely always will be. But it doesn't excuse you, boy, from not warning us. Warning her, not where those two monsters are involved. Yes, you made the right call. Played it well, but you also played it badly."
Perfectly said.
Why didn't he tell them? Like, why wouldn't he have just warned more?
I think that he thinks that she would have said no. She would have been like, "We can't do this." And he was like, "It's wartime, so we got to do it." I also think that he did in the meeting offer Kier Autumn Court as an ally first.
Oh,
thinking okay. that hopefully that would be enough. And Kier was like, "That's funny. I want Valaris."
Yes.
So he was hoping he wouldn't have to play that card?
I think he was hoping plan A would go through.
Okay.
Sometimes it's easier to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. You
sure.
know?
That's just not how they function as a court, though. No. You know, like that's very Spring Court. That's very Tamlin. That's very Autumn Court. Like that just doesn't seem like the inner circle. Like they're family first.
Yeah.
And I do think Moore would have eventually gotten herself to a place and been like, "Fine, I get it."
I agree.
I think she would have been mad and this whole fight would have happened before the meeting with Kier.
Yes.
But then she would have been in the meetings with the palaces to talk about how they can't come into the shops. She would have been in the restrictions meetings.
Right.
That would have been just so much better.
You know, though, it's a little foreshadowing for Akasoff. Rhysand likes to sometimes hold things in. He does this with Feyre and the pregnancy.
True.
And he thinks he can solve it before it becomes a bigger problem.
Yes, that's true.
This is another one of those little seeds that Sarah has planted of like, listen, like he can make mistakes. He's, you know.
He's not infallible.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But all right. So that wraps up this week's episode. Next week. Oh gosh. Next week is really fun. We have the library attack, Elaine and her potential love interests, the High Lords meeting, our mastermind section. I'm so excited. It's a really fun episode, everyone. So stay tuned.
So much to cover.
Yes. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.